Vandenam Shri Guru Shriyata Parakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagana Raghunatham Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savarutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Paran Sahagana Lalita Shivashikam Vitamscha Om Agyana Timurandasya Yanajana Shlakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shigurave Nama Bancha Kalpatarubhyas Chakripa Sindhu Vyevacha Patitanam Pavanibhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Nama Namo Mahabharanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namane Gora Tavishe Nama. So we want to welcome everybody here to our Sunday program of the Sri Chaitanya Saraswati Mat. Sri Chaitanya Saraswati Sevashram here in Soquel, and the divine guidance of Srila Bhakti Sundar Govindadev Goswami Maharaj, and his successor Srila Acharya Maharaj, and all the illustrious Vaishnavas. And today, as you may know, it's Mother's Day in this calendar, so we'll give some honor to all persons here who have children or mothers, you know, we've got some special honor for that. And we're very fortunate that we have the divine shelter of Shishi Guru Guranga Gandharvika Giridhari, who will give us some shelter at their lotus feet. And we can say that in Bengal, many people will worship Ma Kali, Ma Durga. They're worshiping, you know, here in the West they talk about the goddess, but in Bengal they're worshippers of what's called Shakti. Shakti, Durga, Kali, they're superintendent of the material energy. You know, that we are living in this material world. So they have some say, some control over this material energy. In the words of Srila Bhakti Sananda Saraswati Thakur, he talks about there's two halves that go together. One is called Shakti and the other is Shaktiman. Or we can say the power and the powerful, both aspects. And just like the example Govinda Maharaj gives us, this light bulb. This light bulb can illuminate when some power is going through it, electricity. When it's going through the light bulb, then it has some illumination. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur talked about two, what he called moites, or halves. One is Purusha, Krishna, the Lord, and then his energy, his divine energy, Srimati Radharani. We're worshippers of Shishi Radha Krishna. And those two combine in the form of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Mahaprabhu is Krishna and covered with the mood and the luster or effulgence, the kanti, the beauty of Srimati Radharani. So internally he's Krishna, who's black, but he's covered with golden effulgence. And his name, Gauranga, means who is golden-colored, beautiful golden-colored. You know, that is Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So in Bengal, many people that worship Shakti, the Durga Puja, that's a very big holiday in Bengal. And then Kali Puja also. And both of them represent this energy. But in this case, it's the material energy of the creation. And of course, they are the consorts of Lord Shiva, which today has some relationship to that also, because today is the appearance day of Srila Shankaracharya, who we see as an incarnation of Lord Shiva. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur he said that in Bengal they may worship Shakti. And we see people, why are they doing this? Like we sing Bajahure Mana, written by Govinda Das. But originally one time he himself was a devotee of Kali, and he was praying to her for some divine position, for some liberation, from being free from the entanglement of the material world. But Kalima, she answered him, that's not within my jurisdiction. If you want some material benediction, that I can give you. But if you want some spiritual acquisition, then you have to go to Krishna. You have to go to Govinda for that. So he wrote this song, Bajahure Mana, after that realization, after some direct communication by Kali, she told him, he wants some spiritual acquisition, go to Krishna. Then he wrote that, actually, whatever persons are looking for in this material world, he says, Edana Yovana Putra Parijana. Edana Yovana means wealth, Edana Yovana, youth, Putra, good family, good sons, good daughters, Putra Parijana. And then he says, but what are those things? Everyone wants them, but he says, Kamala Dala Jala Jivana Talamala. They're very fragmentary. They're very temporary. They're like a drop of water on the leaf of a lotus flower, which will stay on that lotus flower for only a few seconds and then roll back off into the pond. So he says, Kamala Dala Jala Jivana Talamala. He says, our life is like that. That we are always pursuing something that's coming and going so quickly. What is the use of that much endeavor? Then he says, Bajahunre. Then he says, Shravana Kirtana, Smarana Bandana, Parasevana Dashare, Pujana Sakijana, Atmagnivedana. Govinda Das Abhilasare. This is his realization after that communication. He says, to his own mind, therefore, what should I do? He says, Shravana Kirtana Smarana Bandana. Then you engage in some Shravan, some hearing about the glories of the Lord, Shravana Kirtana, and chanting the Lord's holy name. Shravana Kirtana. Shravana Kirtana, Smarana Bandana. After Shravana Kirtan, then comes Smarana. Smarana means remembering, or we could say meditating. Smarana Bandana, meditating, offering prayers, Bandana. Shravana Kirtana, Smarana Bandana, Parasevana. Parasevana, to serve the lotus feet of the Lord. Parasevana, Dasyare, become a servant of the Lord. Shravana Kirtana, Smarana Bandana, Parasevana, Dashare, Pujana, Sakijana. Then you worship Sakijana. You become a friend, a dear associate, a lover of the Lord. Atmanivedana. And you surrender everything to the Lord. You know, so this is what he realized after that communication. Why I should go after some benefits of this material world. So Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati said, we are actually Shuddha-shaktas. Shuddha-shaktas. Shakta is who's worshipping the material energy. But Shuddha-shakti means the divine energy, spiritual energy. That is, we say, Shishi Radha Krishna. So the internal energy of the Lord, his spiritual energy. And that devotional service, bhakti, is within that internal energy of the Lord. We're trying to take shelter of that internal energy. And how? By changing our consciousness, by changing our activities from those of mundane consciousness and mundane, you know, activities to devotional service, to engaging in what we say Krishna consciousness. And then someone wants to know how I can begin that. Then you can begin that also by joining with the devotees in chanting. This is Mahaprabhu's divine gift, that everyone can engage in chanting the Lord's holy names. You know, we sing the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. But also Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he says, Nam Nama Kari Bahuda Nijasarvar Shaktis Tatrarpita Niyamita Smananena Kala Etadrishi Tavakripa Bhagavan Mamapi Durdaivam Idrishami Hajne Nanuraga. He says, my dear Lord, you have made chanting your name and approaching you so easily because you have unlimited numbers of names. In all kinds of different cultures, they have different names for the Lord. And the Lord has invested all his spiritual potencies in his holy name. And there are no hard and fast rules for chanting the holy name. So you can approach the Lord through the chanting of his holy name. This is not limited to time or place. Here in the temple, we come into the temple before the deities. We did this ceremony called Arti, where they're offering some worship of the Lord on the altar. But that's not the only time you can chant the holy name. You can chant the holy name anywhere, at any time. You know, softly, loudly, melodiously, not so melodiously. But there's no limit. And Mahaprabhu is saying that you have made approach to you so easy by the chanting of your holy name. And he said there are not even any rules about that. There's not any limitation. It's not like this is subject to time and place. I heard one time, when I remember, was Srila Sridhar Maharaj, Srila Goswami Maharaj, went to see him and he was presenting this book that he had just printed here from San Jose. You know, Goswami Maharaj had his temple in San Jose, and he had a printing press there, and it was called Guardian of Devotion Press. And he had printed, at that time, Loving Search for the Lost Servant. And he presented it to Srila Sridhar Maharaj, who was still present at that time. Srila Sridhar Maharaj told him, we are always together because we are together on the plane of consciousness. We are conscious of the same things. We are pursuing interest in Krishna consciousness. We are interested in service to the Lord. We are thinking about the Lord. We are meditating on that. Meditating on the Lord, his devotees, his service. Say, four things are eternal. The Lord's name, the Lord's activities, the Lord's qualities, nam, rupa, and the Lord's form. They're all eternal. Nam, rupa, guna, lila. They're all eternal. So we're all trying to remember the Lord's name, the Lord's qualities, the Lord's divine form, also the Lord's activities, his pastimes. So Srila Sridhar Maharaj said to Goswami Maharaj that we are never separated. Because this is not a question of being together in terms of physical proximity. It doesn't depend on us being in the same place. Because this is divine consciousness. We are together on the platform of consciousness, of Krishna consciousness. So I remembered him, Srila Sridhar Maharaj, saying that, and I was thinking how beautiful that conception was. That is our consideration, that bhakti is the internal presence, the service of the Lord. And the Lord's name is also divine, and the Lord is personally present in his name. But then Mahaprabhu goes on, he says, you have unlimited numbers of names, but he says, but I am so unfortunate that due to my offenses or due to my wrong consciousness, I have no attraction for any of those names. So this is my unfortunate position. You've given everything in terms of chanting your holy names. And anyone can chant any place, anytime, anywhere. It's not limited. As I was saying, it's not limited by time, place, and circumstances. You can be home. You can be walking in the street. And, you know, if you say, well, if I'm in some place where, you know, if I chant, it'll disturb others. But then there's no rule that you can't chant in your own mind. You can chant softly. You can chant in your mind the holy name. But Mahaprabhu says, I'm unfortunate. You've made access to you, approach to you so easily through your holy name. But he says, due to my offenses, I don't have any attraction for the chanting of your holy name. I always remember an example. There's an example given by Srila Rupa Goswami. His example is that of hepatitis. When someone has hepatitis, it's a condition of the liver, and there's some overflowing of bile into one system. Bile, you know, is very bad tasting, and it goes into your blood because your liver is diseased with hepatitis. One form of hepatitis is by drinking some bad water. You can get hepatitis like that, contaminated water. So if someone gets hepatitis due to this disease of the liver, if they taste anything that would normally be sweet, it doesn't taste sweet. If you drink a glass of orange juice, persons will say, have that disease. They'll spit it out. They say, what is in this? What is in this? It tastes terrible. What did you put in this? But no one put anything into it. It's just your perception of taste. Your perception of taste is changed, is made wrong taste, wrong perception by this disease that you have, and that, you know. So what is normally sweet is tasting to you to be bitter. So Srila Rupa Goswami says that material life and material existence, we're all suffering from a disease. And in material existence, that which would be very sweet to us, which would taste very nice to us, it doesn't taste nice. It doesn't taste sweet. It tastes bitter. You know. So as a result, chanting the holy name, which would be normally very attractive to a person who is in spiritual consciousness, to a materialist it'll appear unattractive. And Mahaprabhu says, due to my offenses, you've given all approach to you through your holy name, but I have no attraction for that. So it's like a disease. Our existence is like a disease. And sometimes you could even say this material body, in one sense, is like a disease, because it's going through so many transformations. And ultimately, what will happen to this material body? I was reading about that, and some of us who maybe, you know, have some experience on this plane, they, you know, if you lose someone close to you, father, mother, close friend, or something like that, then you may reflect at that time, where does all this end? Where does it all end? You know, is this what it comes to? Is this where it all, it culminates in this? And I don't remember the exact poem. There's a poem, I guess it's by Thomas Gray, that Srila Maharaj used to quote. He'd say, the pomp of power, the boast of heraldry, and all that wealth and all that beauty e'er gave, doth lead in the inevitable hour, the path of glory doth lead to the grave. That was Srila Sridhar Maharaj used to quote that. It's called Elegy in a Courtyard, in a Churchyard. All this, you know, the pomp of power, the great display of power and pride that comes from power, pomp of power, the boast of heraldry, of great valor, and all these things, all these acquisitions in the material world, so we're so much proud of, and we're so much eager to get that. You know. But where does it all lead? Ultimately, it leads to this material body, one day or another, it will end. And when this material body ends, then everything you've acquired in this world, it's over, just like that. It's just flickering, you know, it's gone. It has no permanence. Therefore, Bhagavad Gita is saying that those who actually are awake. You know, he says the materialist, he's awake to enjoyment, but sleeping in terms of to his spiritual existence. Those who are actually awake, you know, they understand what is that the nature of existence is spiritual. Then they can take to some activities on the eternal plane. Activities, their activities on this plane of existence. We talked about that. So many activities. What you can gain out of this world. There are so many things. People are working day and night. Or like that song again, Bhajahu Remana, says, all my life I'm serving kripanas. Kripanas. Bengali. Where kripa means mercy. But who is a kripana means a person who has no mercy. They have no mercy. That's the kind of people that we get employment from. All my life, he says, I'm serving kripanas, people without mercy. And I'm working hard in the heat and the cold, day and night I'm working hard. And he says, why? For a little bit of flickering happiness. You know, I'll get some money. I'll get some happiness with that money, and for that, I'm spending all my days, summer and winter, all the time. I'm just working hard for kripanas. Miserly persons, just so I can get a little bit of material enjoyment. But that, as the poem says, as the song says, that's temporary. Well, what we are interested in, how we got some interest in this. Actually, he got some interest in this by contact with the devotees of the Lord. We use the word guru, but also Srila Sridhar Maharaj, he would use the word guardian, divine guardian, because in the qualities of surrender, Srila Rupa Goswami mentions qualities of surrender. Bhakti Vinod Thakur glorifies him in his poems of Sharanagati. Sharanagati means surrender. Srila Sridhar Maharaj would talk about the special quality of what is Goptritve Bharanam. Goptritve Bharanam means to accept the Lord as one's guardian, or to enter into the family of the Lord. Here maybe guardian can have a different meaning, but you know, guardian, you know, someone who is giving you, entering into the Lord's family. You know, that is our divine wealth. So, Goptritve Bharanam. Accepting qualities of surrender, which is doinya, humility, and accepting everything that's favorable for the service of the Lord, rejecting everything that's unfavorable. If you read, somebody can read, oh, your books, it's hard to get through your books. You say so many things that you have to do, and so many things that you can't do. It's like bewildering. Somebody can say, oh, it's bewildering. No, it's not really bewildering, because everything that's positive that you're asked to do, to do everything favorable to the service of the Lord, that has one purpose. That's so that we can always remember the Lord. And when we are asked not to do this, not to do that, not to engage in what we'll call, you know, wrong activities, or, you know, activities which are going to destroy divine consciousness. Not to do those. We're avoiding those activities. Why? So we won't forget the Lord. So that which is positive, you know, come into the temple, see the divine form of the Lord, offer some prayers to the Lord. Those are positive things. Those are so you can always remember the Lord. And then things that you're asked to avoid, like keeping bad association, keeping association with people who are that will lead us on a wrong path, bad association. Why we're told to avoid that? So we can not forget the Lord. That bad association will cause us to forget the Lord. You know, instead of someone being interested in something, you know, which it will benefit us, they'll say, oh, why waste your time with this? Let's go let's go to the bar and have a few drinks. You know, so in that way, one is told to avoid activities which will cause one to forget the Lord. So then also one will feel oneself always protected by the Lord. So that's, then comes Goptritve Varnanam. Goptritve Varnanam, entering in the Lord's family or accepting the Lord as one's guardian. And Atmani Vedana, surrendering everything to the service of the Lord. Atmani, using all your senses, mind, body, words, everything, in the service of the Lord. Those things are beneficial for us, but especially, I mentioned today is Shankaracharya's appearance day. Shankaracharya, he's the leader of the impersonalist, but covered leader, we can say. He's showing himself as the leader of the impersonalist, but he did write one poem where he says, Bhaja Govinda, Bhaja Govinda, Bhaja Govinda, Muda Mate. Starts out like that. He's saying, worship Govinda, worship Govinda, worship Govinda, Muda Mate. You mudhas or asses. He says that to his followers. They're all personless, but he's saying, worship Govinda. And then he says, in another place he describes that one who is a liberated soul will actually worship a deity of Govinda, of Krishna. Startling commentaries, startling mentions by Shankaracharya, but it's not out of character in the sense that we understand Shankaracharya to be a divine incarnation of Lord Shiva, who had the purpose of gradually bringing people back to the Vedas, you know, because it said Lord Buddha, originally, there was a lot of violence going on, animal slaughter. So Lord Buddha said that, you know, that you must take up what is called ahimsa. You must take up non-violent activities. Buddha taught, you know, this peace, that, you know, non-violent activities. But then some people who misunderstood, they said to Lord Buddha, but it says in the Vedas that we can do animal sacrifices. But that is misunderstood. Gomeda, Asvamedha. We can do animal sacrifices. But actually the Vedas was, this sacrifice was for another time, and it was for rejuvenating the life of an animal, that if by sacrifice you could put in an old animal like a horse or a cow and then rejuvenate, bring that animal to life as a colt or as a calf, then you could do that sacrifice. But nobody can do that. There are no mantras, there are no persons who could do that. So Lord Buddha, he said, I do not accept the Vedas. I don't follow the Vedas. Lord Buddha said that. When he taught ahimsa, nonviolence, then person said, but in the Vedas, sacrifice of animals is mentioned. And he said that, I do not accept that Vedas. I do not accept them. So he rejected Vedas. And I have seen, when I'm in Thailand, for instance, talk with the Buddha sometimes, Srila Govinda Maharaj had very good, he would visit a Buddhist temple near where our ashram is, and the monks there are very much like Srila Govinda Maharaj. They were very affectionate to him. So when I talked with one monk, he said that although in some countries, Buddhists are vegetarians, Thailand they're not. You know, they go begging, and if somebody gives them meat, they'll eat the meat. But then when I talked to the Buddhist monk, he said, but if anybody puts a cow or a chicken at the Buddhist monastery, nobody will kill that animal. So they're by nature not wanting to hurt. You know. After Lord Buddha appeared in Gaya, then he taught something of this ahimsa. But he rejected the Vedas. Then Shankaracharya came. As I said, he's an incarnation of Lord Shiva. He taught what is basically impersonalism. He taught what is basically Buddhism. But what he, instead of speaking of nirvana, he spoke of nirvishesh brahman instead of nirvana. But the practice, the conclusion is similar to Buddhism. Shankaracharya taught that. Some difference is there because, but he didn't also accept the soul. Buddhism don't accept the existence of an individual soul. But Shankaracharya then brought the people back to the Vedas by presenting what is also very much like Buddhism, which was very popular in India at that time. Lord Buddha appeared in all of India was Buddhist. Shankaracharya presented what is like Buddhism with reference to the Vedas. And he presented the Vedas in such a way that was covering the Vedas, but bringing people back to the Vedas, because they were familiar with those teachings. Lord Shiva, he told to his wife Parvati, then in Kali Yuga I will appear in this way, to mislead or misrepresent the Vedas and bring people in this way. But it's with the purpose of bringing people back towards the Vedas. Then after that came Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu presented what is the correct conclusion of the Vedas, which is that both the impersonal and the personal conception are existing because the impersonal idea is the energy of the Lord, but it emanates from the divine form of the Lord. So Mahaprabhu taught Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva. The living entity, as we may gather from Shankaracharya's teaching, is the same as the Lord, because qualitatively we are the same as the Lord. The Lord is Sat, we are Sat, eternal. The Lord is Chit, we are also Chit, we're conscious, eternal conscious. And Ananda, the Lord is full of unlimited bliss or happiness. And the nature of the soul, the nature of the living entity, is to be full of happiness. So simultaneously, we are one with the Lord. But there's another part. Simultaneously one with the Lord, but we are not the Lord, because quantitatively we are different. Simultaneously one, but different. Different means we can be covered by illusion, because we are subject to the Lord's illusory energy, because we are minute souls. So what did Mahaprabhu say is the nature of the soul? He says, Jivar Swarup Oi Krishnir Nirvidar. The living entity, us, we are eternal servants of Krishna, of the Lord. So that is our position. Anyway, we're happy to welcome everyone here tonight, and we are trying to offer some service to our divine spiritual masters, you know, Srila Bhakti Sundar Govindadeva Goswami Maharaj, Srila Bhakti Rakak Sridhardeva Goswami Maharaj, Srila Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada. They gave their lives so that others would be able to receive something of divine mercy. The nature of this world, people don't know what is the real benefit. As Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to sign letters, he said, "Your ever well-wisher." He signed in that way. Srila Prabhupada also signed his letters in that way. "Your ever well-wisher." And it is true. These persons, they are our ever well-wisher. They only will think of our benefit. One astrologer told about Srila Sridhar Maharaj, he said, "He can do good for others, but he will not do good for himself." Meaning he is not self-interested. He's not interested in something that will benefit himself. He's only interested in what will be a benefit to others. No self-interest. No provincial interest. Not looking for one's own benefit. Not trying to get some acquisition or some benefit from any situation. And that is what we have found. That is what I found. Always, with the divine guardians, our divine spiritual masters, they always find that they are always interested in what will help us. I feel myself fortunate to be able to have had and have that kind of association. Because our best interest is in the heart of a saint. If you can find some place in a saint's heart, it's not enough just to think, oh, who is the true qualified spiritual master? It's not enough just that you will accept the spiritual master. You must be accepted by the spiritual master. One thing is to find who is a satguru, who is a true spiritual master. Another is to find a place in the heart of the saint. So that we're trying for. Anyway, I'm happy that everyone came tonight. I want to welcome everyone here to our Sri Chaitanya Saraswat Sevashram. Anyone have a question?
The animate principle within the body that keeps us going, if they don't believe in the soul, the Buddhist.
Buddhists will believe in the end of all material activities, in the end of material consciousness, and ultimately attaining a state of peace, of being relieved from all mundane consciousness. So they have some spiritual pursuit. They may not accept the existence of individual spirit. They may not accept the position of God, per se, of the divine. But as we always heard, in one sense, they are following the divine because Lord Buddha himself is an incarnation of the Lord. So he appeared, and by worshiping him, people are worshiping the Lord. When I go to all these places, they're worshiping Buddha. They have temples where they're worshiping in that way. But their final conclusion is nirvana. Nirvana means the termination of all that is material. But in one sense, we consider that to be a little incomplete. Because one example is that, you know, if you have a lot of problems in your house, one possibility is to just level the house, to just tear the whole thing down. But that's not really the most ideal solution. The real solution is, ideal solution is to correct the problems and be able to deal with things, to get rid of everything that is wrong, to get rid of. So we want, the mind may be a source of so much entanglement, but the mind, in the Gita it said, the mind can be the worst enemy or the best friend. So the mind can also function as a best friend. On material consciousness, the mind is always rejecting, you know, anything that is against mundane enjoyment and promoting whatever will give us some mundane happiness. That's the mind on the mundane level. But on a spiritual level, there is spiritual mind, there is spiritual consciousness, there are spiritual activities. So on a spiritual level, your mind can work for your benefit. Normally, we're not used to that. I'm not used to getting so much great benefit from my mind. You know, Srila Govindamaraj's remark, when he first came to the temple of Srila Srinarmaraj, the first thing that Srila Srinarmaraj said, can you follow me and not follow your mind? That was his first thing. It's a basic lesson. You may think, oh, what is that? That's mind control. But no, because your mind is giving you some bad guidance so often. You can say, well, sometimes my mind gives me good advice. Maybe, but your mind will also throw that in your face. Oh yeah, I gave you good advice last week, so now you owe me. It's like that. Mind is not disinterested. There's an example given by Srila Srinarmaraj that I like. He says that the individual soul of this world is a minor. Minor mean under age. So has a great wealth. We have a great wealth that's come to us. You know, we have been left such great wealth on the spiritual level. But we are minors, so we have received an inheritance. You can say an inheritance from your father. We've received an inheritance, but because we are underage, then some administrators have been appointed to administrate our estate, You know, you've got an inheritance, you're underage, so there's some administrators appointed by the court, etc., like that, who will administrate your estate. And these administrators are your mind and in your intelligence. You know, they are the administrators of your estate. But they should be saying, those administrators should be saying that everything is for the service of the Lord, and we're doing everything in the service of the Lord. And they're maybe saying that, but actually they're usurping what is divine property and utilizing it for enjoyment. And supposedly they're appointed administrators for us, but they're corrupt. They're usurping what is our inheritance and spending it in a nonsense way. Then Srila Sridhar Maharaj would talk. Then minor soul has to make contact with a major soul or someone who will give him proper guidance, because instead of these administrators that are saying everything is for him, but it's not. They're stealing. They're robbing. It's not for us. They are saying it's for us, but it's not, because they're corrupt. They're corrupt mind, corrupt intelligence. They're misusing our inheritance. But if we make contact with a major soul, which means a realized soul, then we can get proper guidance, and then we can utilize what is our inheritance. There's an example given by Srila Sridhar Maharaj, meaning that right now we are following our mind, but our mind is mundane. So our mind is giving us wrong directions. Buddhism, nirvana, you know, stop the activities of the mundane mind. But there are also spiritual consciousness. The mind can be engaged in spiritual consciousness. Our idea is not to just tear everything down and reach a state of, you know, non-existence. We want to enter into the plane of spiritual existence. So that is the difference. We see that the soul has activities on the spiritual plane. And that's a little beyond what is given Buddhism. But I have no... I remember. Anyway. Any other question?
The Mayavadi?
Huh?
The Sankaracharya.
Yeah, today is his appearance day. Leader of the impersonalist. But I talked about him. He's an incarnation of Lord Shiva. He has some purpose. And Lord Shiva himself, he told the Parvati, he said, Radhananam Sarvesham Vishnur Radhanam. Of all the forms of worship, he told that the worship of Lord Vishnu, that's the highest. That's what Lord Shiva told to Parvati. But Parvati, she's a servant of Lord Shiva. So she might have felt a little depressed by that news. Of all forms of worship, worship of Lord Vishnu is the highest, because she's thinking, but I'm serving my Lord Shiva, then what's my position? But then Lord Shiva said, but even higher than the service of Lord Vishnu is the service of Lord Vishnu's devotees. Then Parvati's thinking, yes, Shiva, he is a servant of Vishnu. He's a servant of Krishna. And I'm serving him. I'm serving the Lord's devotees, so my position is proper. So that is our understanding. We're servants of the spiritual energy and servants of the Lord's devotees. And Shankaracharya, incarnation of Lord Shiva. And he gave that advice. Okay. All right. So, any other question?
I was on the way here. I was listening to the lecture of Trigandhi Maharaj. He was explaining about bhakti, that it's ahoisuki apratiyata. Could you say something about that?
Well, I always used to hear that verse, Savai pumsam paro dharmo yato bhaktira dhoksaje, haituki apratiyata ya yatma supersedati. Savai pumsam paro dharmo yato bhaktira dhoksaje. The best activity for everyone is to establish a loving relationship with the Lord. But then the verse says, that service to the Lord should be a haitukiya pradyata, without any material motivation and without interruption. Yayatma supersedidi. And that will completely satisfy the soul. That will satisfy it, satisfy us completely. And I used to read that verse and I used to think, but this is very hard to understand, because a haitukiya pradyata, without any material motivation, everything I do is materially motivated. I don't know what it is to not be materially motivated. Everything I do is materially motivated. A haituki, how will I know what is, how can I do what is not materially motivated, because that's my existence. And
well, he was explaining this.
A haituki ya pradyata. And it shouldn't be without any interruption. And I thought, but I'm always on the mental level. So some days I feel very good and I'm very eager to do something, and then some days I don't want to do anything. I don't want to hear anything. I don't want to know anything. Some days I'm fine, and some days not fine. My mind is like that. So then how will I understand a haituki without any material motivation? And that's not coming from me. That's not my nature. Even if I somehow or other had, you know, no material motivation, how long is that going to last? It's supposed to be without any interruption. So I was thinking, how can I understand this verse? I understand that we should have a loving relationship with the Lord, but how can it be free of material motivation and without any interruption? But then I read one explanation of Srila Sridhar Maharaj. He said, that divine plane already exists beyond you. It's already existing. The spiritual plane exists, has an existence. So if you say it has no material motivation, that means that that plane is already existing. It's not part of this material world. That divine plane exists. It's not something that's produced out of this world. To say that it has no material motivation, that means that that divine spiritual plane exists free of this material world, and that it's without any interruption. Srila Maharaj explained that means it's irresistible. On that divine plane, it's irresistible, meaning, give the example of a tsunami. When a tsunami comes in, you cannot resist that wave. Somebody may be able to swim, or somebody doesn't know how to swim, but when the tsunami comes in, it doesn't matter whether you swim or not. That wave will carry you. So it's irresistible. But in this sense, it's irresistible in a good way. It will carry you. So it means when that divine plane will descend to us, that that plane already exists, means that it has no material motivation, means that the spiritual plane is always existing. Whether we're aware of it or not, it exists. It has no material motivation. And that it has no interruption means that when it will come to you, it will be irresistible. You will not be able to resist that. So it will have no interruption, meaning nothing can stop it. It's irresistible. That's a spiritual. And that Srila Sridhar Maharaj explained that verse. And then I thought, well, that makes a lot more sense to me, because if I think about it from my perspective looking up, it's not going to work. I'm not free of material motivations, and I can't do service, which is uninterrupted, which won't be impeded by my mind. But if that plane will descend to us, it will be irresistible. And of course it will be divine plane coming to you. It can come to you through the mercy of the devotees. And Prapana Jivanamrita Srila Sridhar Maharaj talks about that. He says, right now in our heart there are so many unwanted things, but they're hard, like frozen ice. So how are you going to break frozen ice? Ice pick? No, it's not going to work. There's a great amount of ice, you can't break that. But if the temperature will go up, all that ice will just melt away. So at the proper time, if one submissively, or what's the right word, if one goes on with one's service, even tolerating so many impediments and so many things which will come from our own heart and from our own senses, wrong things, can tolerate that and depend on the Lord's mercy, then at the proper time that mercy may come to one and all those unwanted things will melt and disappear. Anyway, I've read these things. To me, they're encouraging. They're encouraging because without it, if I'm not going to consider it in that way, how am I going to think about things? But Sridhar Maharaj gives that kind of hope. The Lord will appear in our heart. The temperature will go up and all unwanted things, like so much ice, they'll just melt away.